Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. Today, we are talking about biblical manhood and womanhood, part one.
Which means there'll be a part two. So we're getting ready for this little marriage conference that we're doing for our church. And anytime we talk about marriage, actually, anytime we talk about gender, we're talking about manhood and womanhood. And so this is one of the pressing questions we always get, just because it's such a live topic of conversation in our culture more broadly, and because many of us are trying to figure out, what does it mean to be a godly man? What does it mean to be a godly woman? How should men and women relate to each other? How are we the same? How are we different? What is God's intent and design for us? So we thought we'd use this podcast and the next one to just tease out that we're basically just going to do some, like, hey, let's frame up a conversation here. Let's do some teaching and some discussion of, actually, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the definition of biblical manhood and womanhood put forth by John Piper and Wayne Grudem in their book, Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. This definition, I don't remember when this book was first published, maybe 1995. I've got a later version that's like 2006, but this definition has stood the test of time. I think it's one of the most helpful and thorough definitions of manhood and womanhood, and I like the nuance that it has. And so we'll start there. And if you don't like the definition, that's okay. You can send us an email, and we'll love to interact over what you like or don't like. But I think it's good to start somewhere to think about how the Bible defines and describes manhood and womanhood. Because, of course, as Christians, it's no surprise that the culture has all kinds of ideas and even confusion about what this means. We want to say, what does the Bible say about what it means to be a man and a woman? So we've all got this book in front of us. I'm just going to read. Dusty, you want to throw anything in by way of preview?
No, it's good.
Before
I'll jump in. Keep going.
I'm going to read a few sections from this book, and then what we want to get to is the definition of masculinity and the definition of femininity, or really the definition of manhood and womanhood. So it's those definitions where we want to spend our time, but I want to read a few things that kind of get us there. John Piper is writing the chapter. Let me read his intro. When I was a boy growing up in Greenville, South Carolina, my father was away from home about two-thirds of every year. And while he preached across the country, we prayed, my mother and my older sister and I. What I learned in those days was that my mother was omnicompetent. He goes on to describe all the things around the house and in life that his mother would do while Dad was traveling. He goes on to say, it never occurred to me to think of my mother and my father in the same category. Both were strong. Both were bright. Both were kind. Both would kiss me and both would spank me. Both were good with words. Both prayed with fervor and loved the Bible. But unmistakably, my father was a man and my mother was a woman. They knew it and I knew it. And it was not mainly a biological fact. It was mainly a matter of personhood and relational dynamics. When my father came home, he was clearly the head of the house. He led in prayer at the table. He called the family together for devotions. He got us to Sunday school and worship. He drove the car. He guided the family to where we would sit. He made the decision to go somewhere for lunch. He led us to the table. He paid the check. He was the one we knew we would reckon with if we broke a family rule or were disrespectful to mother. But since my father was gone most of the time, mother used to do most of those leadership things too. So it never occurred to me that leadership and submission had anything to do with superiority and inferiority. And it didn't have to do with muscles and skills either. It was not a matter of capabilities and competencies. It had to do with something I could never have explained as a child. And I have been a long time in coming to understand it as part of God's great goodness in creating us male and female. It had to do with something very deep. I know that the specific rhythm of life that was in our home is not the only good one, but there were dimensions of reality and goodness in it that ought to be there in every home. Indeed, they ought to be there in varying ways in all mature relationships between men and women. What I like that Piper's doing in this intro is I think he taps into the intuitiveness of these things. There's a sense in which if you grew up with a mom and a dad or with aunts and uncles or with, you know, male role models and female role models, there's a sense in which you just sort of intuit, oh, there's differences here. And he's saying these differences, though they can be distorted, are rooted in something beautiful and something rich and something that even to a kid make sense. And so he, as he goes on here, he's going to say, hey, what I'm trying to do here is to not just say, here's what the Bible says about manhood and womanhood, but to say there's something deeply beautiful and something that we inherently sort of know and see and sense in this that is good and beautiful.
I think the gold in that intro, and I'm glad you read it, is this comment where he says that it never occurred to him that leadership and submission had anything to do with superiority or inferiority. Because, and the reason I think this podcast is necessary and helpful is because when we hear leadership, we immediately start thinking about inferiority and superiority. And that's why I think this conversation is worth it. And I'm glad that he includes that in the intro.
Yeah, he also says, and look, this is really common sense. One of the reasons we want to frame up this topic is because every little boy is asking, what does it mean as I grow up to be a man and not a woman? And every little girl as she grows up is asking, what does it mean that I'm a woman and not a man? And those are important questions. And in a culture where those questions, we're scared to answer those questions, and the culture around us even would say, you shouldn't answer that question. But man, as Christians, that's a vital question. And you as a child remember having those questions yourself. Who am I supposed to emulate? And what kinds of cult character traits am I supposed to develop? And what does it mean for me to be me and not to be me in sort of an amorphous blob, but me as male or female? So these things are really foundational to our personhood. And I think I want the church to have healthy and robust answers to those questions. So let's dive into his definition of masculinity, all right? We're going to read it, and then we're going to tackle it a phrase at a time and talk about each phrase. Here's the definition. Let me read it. At the heart of mature masculinity is a sense of benevolent responsibility to lead, provide for, and protect women in ways appropriate to a man's differing relationships. There's your definition. At the heart of mature masculinity is a sense of benevolent responsibility to lead, provide for, and protect women in ways appropriate to a man's differing relationships. So let's just tackle each phrase, which is actually what he does in this chapter, is just to work out what each thoughtful phrase of this definition starts with at the heart of. So what he's saying is, hey, this definition is not exhaustive. There's more to masculinity than this, but there's not less. This is at the heart of what it is, even if there's more that we could say and should say and more that fills it out. Okay, so at the heart of mature masculinity, which is an important phrase, Dusty.
Yeah, it sure is.
He says mature masculinity, in other words, masculinity can be immature. Yep. It can be distorted. In fact, that's what sin does. It distorts masculinity. It causes us to be immature in our masculinity. So he says, hey, this definition assumes a mature masculinity. There are certainly ways, and we look around and see them everywhere, where masculinity and femininity can be immature.
Yeah, and I think what's helpful there too is that means that no matter where you're at in your masculinity, that there's growth and there's hope.
Yes.
As you progress forward.
This is a great line. Mature means that a man's sense of responsibility is in the process of growing out of its sinful distortions and limitations and finding its true nature as a form of love, not a form of self-assertion. That's a beautiful phrase, that its true nature is love, not self-assertion. And so we're talking here about the mature, the beautiful ideal of mature masculinity. That's what we're trying to define here. And that, at the heart of mature masculinity, is a sense of benevolent responsibility. So he says, now, let's talk about this idea of sense. He says, to be masculine, a man must not only be responsible, but sense or feel that he is. If he does not affirm this sense of responsibility, then he's not mature, which is really interesting.
Yeah, he feels it on his own shoulders.
Well,
and
he affirms that this sense of responsibility is the heart of masculinity. In other words, if I don't affirm that, then I'm still immature. Like what Piper's saying is, to be a mature man, you have to agree this is what masculinity is, and you have to feel that placed upon you and walk into it with a sense of, okay, this is what I am to be about. The helpful thing here is he says, look, this word sense also implies that a man can be mature in his masculinity, even when he's not in relationships that relate to a woman. So he says, maybe you're a monk. Maybe you work on an oil rig in the North Pacific or the North Atlantic. Maybe you're in combat. Maybe there's seasons of your life where you're just, what does it mean to take responsibility to lead, provide for, protect women when your life circumstance is doesn't actually put you in the context where that is lived out? Well, he says, well, the difference is you have this sense that that is right and good. And so in any context where you're placed among women, that sense of responsibility that you have to lead, provide for, protect in ways appropriate to differing relationships is realized. This is a fascinating line, Dusty. For example, this sense of responsibility will affect how he talks about women and the way he relates to pornography and the kind of concern he shows for the marriages of the men around him. I think that's a powerful line, because I just think if men, and especially young men, and especially single men, would embrace, hey, the way I talk about women, the way I think about women is part of mature masculinity. Like, it's not just in an actual relationship with an actual woman, but in how I think about, how I talk about, how I relate to things like pornography. These are ways in which my masculinity is playing out either in a beautiful way or in a distorted and immature way.
Yeah, it's interesting in this succinct definition that he includes that. Out of all the things he could be saying, he talks about pornography. So it's even interesting in the pornography conversation, which is vast and major and a huge thorn in the church's side and one of our main sins to always be dealing with, that he's basically saying, like, what if instead of just stop looking at pornography because it's bad for you, you started seeing it as a responsibility toward how you view the women?
Well,
who are putting themselves out
and
there.
And saying this sense of responsibility has implications for that.
Right.
So stop justifying that sin and that distortion and start taking responsibility for who you're called to be. The next word in the definition is benevolent, a sense of benevolent responsibility. And this word, he says, is intended to show that the responsibility of manhood is for the good of woman. Benevolent responsibility is meant to rule out self-aggrandizing authoritarianism and disdaining condescension and any act that makes a mature woman feel patronized rather than honored and prized. And so it seems like that word carries a lot of freight, because there's a lot of ways that men relate to women in ways that come across authoritarian, condescending, feeling patronized. There's something here about the demeanor and the disposition and the how you carry this responsibility. Bethany, how are you tracking along with this so far?
I'm feeling some tension a little bit just because of the church that I grew up in and some of the things that were taught about biblical manhood and womanhood. So I feel like I have maybe more questions. I'm still kind of in the like learning and processing. What do I actually truly believe? I don't know. I think I feel like this is probably a good conversation for me to learn from. I don't know how helpful I'll be contributing. Maybe I'll have a lot of questions for you guys, but
that's great. I imagine there are lots of listeners that are in a similar place where, you know, how they've been shaped in these things is maybe led to some confusion or some sense of like, yeah, I actually would just like to gain some biblical clarity on what this is supposed to look like. It's interesting because I think there's two streams, at least as a pastor, that I've experienced. One is people coming out of little to no formation in this area of just like, well, I don't know what it means to be a man or be a woman. I just need someone to tell me. And then people coming out of a stream where actually I've been told very specifically what that's supposed to look like. And now I'm not sure that what I was told actually is how it should play out. And so I feel the challenge as a pastor of speaking well to both of those stories and both of those categories of people.
Yeah, and there's probably even a third one that I would add, that where the experience is everything I experience hurt me, so I'm just going to reject it, and I'm gonna flip those roles and go get it myself, you know?
Yeah. All right, so the next word is responsibility, benevolent responsibility. John Piper says, the burden of this word is to stress that masculinity is a God-given trust for the good of all his creatures, not a right for men to exercise for their own self-exaltation or ego satisfaction. It is less a prerogative than a calling. It is a duty and obligation and charge. I think that's a really powerful idea, because I see a lot of the biggest mistake that I think men make is to, because they know there's a certain amount of power and strength that God's given them, to begin to use that in ways that are about their rights and their authority, versus seeing, hey, I have been given responsibility. How I use my strength, how I use the resources God has given me, this is responsibility, and I'm responsible before God. I don't want to think in terms of rights. I want to think in terms of responsibility.
And we see that played out in Genesis. Piper mentions this in the book, where Adam and Eve are sinning, and then it's not that Eve hadn't sinned, but he's like, "Hey, Adam, what's going on?"
You know,
he goes after Adam with responsibility.
Yep. Okay, so the responsibility is to lead, provide for, and protect women. So here's where it gets a little dicey.
Women can't lead, women can't provide.
Yeah.
They got to be protected. I mean, come on.
Well, here's where we're going to go.
Okay.
All right. So to lead, provide for, and protect. Let's start with the word lead. He says, hey, this word is a problematic word because it's so broad and it means a lot of different things. But the idea here is, the aim of leadership is to bring out all the strengths of the people around the leader in ways that move them forward to a desired goal. All right. So he's saying leadership is not about domineering. It's not about advancing yourself. It's about allowing and helping other people to thrive and reach their full potential. And so that's the kind of leadership that we're talking about. He also says this leadership involves a general pattern of initiative, which I think the phrase general pattern is even a great nuance. He's saying, I'm not saying a woman is never to lead, or, you know, but I'm saying there's a general pattern that men should be taking the initiative. As a general rule, God has called men to step out in leadership. And the call of leadership is the same call that Jesus exercises toward the church, right? He says, the husband, especially in marriage, the leadership of a husband is not a leadership that gives to the man all the rights and authority that Christ has, right? A man is to lead his wife to Christ, not to take the place of Christ in her life. And I think that's a huge one, Dusty. If married men would see their calling as, I'm responsible to lead my wife toward thriving in her relationship with Christ, that's a very high calling and a very different bar for leadership than I want her to do what I say, or I want her to respect me, or I want her to, you know, think I'm great.
Well, that also reminds me of one of the calls in Ephesians is to wash the woman in the word, which is Paul's way of saying it's the husband's responsibility to be spiritually creating context for the wife to flourish and grow spiritually. And so you can't negate that responsibility.
He's really good about saying, hey, look, obviously there's circumstances where this is going to play out differently. Like, what if you're a woman who's married to a non-Christian husband? Well, then you're going to be taking initiative for the spiritual development of your kids. That a woman in that kind of a marriage is going to be taking responsibility for things. But he says, but God's intent is that the man ought to be. And so when a woman has to do that, and sometimes she does have to do that, it's a sad thing. It's something that we ought to see as, hey, sometimes that's necessary, but God's design, God's ideal would be for a husband, a father to be leading his home, his family toward Christ and toward the word. So this leadership, he says a lot more about what this looks like in marriage, because I think particularly this idea of what does it mean to lead, he would say that's primarily going to play out in marriage. That's the place where all the questions get asked, is like, what does this look like in a marriage? So
one of the great lines that he has in here is he says, and I think this is helpful because he kind of puts it on the, he puts the cookies on the bottom shelf by saying, hey, Christ is the aim, Christ is the aim, Christ is the aim, and how he cared for the church. But Christ never had to apologize for anything. He never had to apologize to the church, but husbands must do this often. And I think that's a good practical thing for men to be considering is, when was the last time I apologized? Not like you need to start looking for things to apologize for that you didn't do. That's weird. But legitimately repenting, legitimately apologizing, and that too is a piece of responsibility.
So to lead, and we'll come back and say more about that as we get to the definition of womanhood, and because he's going to frame out even more fully how does this look together? The next word is to provide for. And he's saying, look, a man should feel responsibility to provide for his wife and children. That's not saying his wife shouldn't share in that responsibility. It's not saying there's not ways she can contribute. But he's saying, he says, when there is no bread on the table, it is the man who should feel the main pressure to do something to get it there. And I think all the women said amen, right? Like, I don't think any woman's like, I just want a husband that lays around and doesn't care about that and forces me to do that. He also says a man will feel his personhood compromised if he, through sloth or folly or lack of discipline, becomes dependent over the long haul on his wife's income. What's fascinating about this is I read a lot of academic sociologists, and every study run by non-Christians shows this to be true, that when men are not responsible for providing, man, they just feel like their personhood is compromised in ways. And so this is a place where not only do we have the wisdom of the scriptures, but there's just something inherent in men because of how God made us that, like, a man feels responsible for that in a good way, and hopefully in a way that moves him toward flourishing and thriving. He says this, the point of this Genesis text, speaking of the curse in Genesis 3, is not to define limits for what else the man and woman might do, but it does suggest that any role reversal at these basic levels will be contrary to the original intention of God and contrary to the way he made us as male and female. Supporting the family is primarily the responsibility of the husband. Caring for children, if they're there, is primarily the responsibility of the wife. So he's saying, I'm not saying what they can and can't do or should and shouldn't do. I'm just saying there's a general pattern here that the scriptures lay out for us. And so I think he's careful to nuance there, because what I've seen a lot of people do with that is overly prescriptive things that say, well, if a wife ever makes money outside the home, she's not fulfilling her biblical role. Or if a husband, has an injury at work and can't work, and so his wife has to go to work. Mm-hmm. Or if a husband has, let's say, has a career-ending injury where he's unable to work, man, that's an mm-hmm. abdication of his biblical role. No, I don't think so. It's not. But there is a general pattern here that the Bible lays out.
Yeah, and Proverbs 31 pictures a wife with. I mean, you read Proverbs 31, you see a strong woman.
Yeah, she makes some money
and she can do some work.
Yeah,
and so he's definitely not saying like, yeah, women. That's all women do is just, you know, they're barefoot in the kitchen and that's about it. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But he is saying masculinity feels a responsibility to provide, and so if the man doesn't feel that responsibility, he's not living into masculinity. And then finally is this idea of protect. And I love what Piper does here. He says, he envisions, okay, hey, imagine you, he says a thought exercise. Imagine you and some woman, maybe your wife, or let's say not your wife, just a woman that you know, are walking down the street and some guy jumps out with a knife. The man who would push the woman forward and go like, hey, go deal with that guy is a coward. Like, yes, in that moment, every man feels like he's responsible to step forward. And it's not because he feels like that woman is weaker. In fact, she might have a black belt in karate and he might be the fattest and least athletic person you know. But regardless of what the individual traits are of that man and that woman, the man should feel that sense of responsibility to protect. And that's just inherent mm-hmm. to how masculinity works itself out. This is why, you know, in the movie Titanic, when you see the shady guys getting in the lifeboat, right? You're like, that's not cool. Like, the women and the children get the lifeboat, yeah. right? The dudes aren't supposed to be getting in there. That's cowardice. So the idea that men should be the ones to accept danger is sort of what's at the heart of this definition here.
This whole idea of protecting women is obviously key in the culture that we have too. I'm constantly, if there's one thing that I'm probably beating into my sons, it's this whole idea of honoring and protecting women. And so one of the prayers that we pray constantly at our house with the boys is to be honoring and protecting the girls. And they have three sisters to be trying this out on. And so whenever there's like hitting or fighting or punching or wrestling, that's never between the boys and the girls. Like, there's plenty of boys in my house that they can wrestle each other. And so to exert strength on a woman is to not protect her.
And then he finally closes out the definition. So lead, provide for, and protect women in ways appropriate to a man's differing relationships. So he's just saying, hey, look, marriage is one kind of a relationship. Brotherhood and sisterhood is another kind of relationship. Working together as work associates is another kind of relationship. There's all these differing relationships that men and women have. And this definition gets applied in ways appropriate to those differing relationships. So obviously the way I'm called to lead, provide, and provide for and protect my wife is different from the way I'm called to lead, provide for, and protect Bethany, who I work with, or any other woman in our church. So there are different relationships and different scales on which this plays out. But at the heart of mature masculinity is that disposition or that inclination to lead, provide for, and protect women in ways that are appropriate to those relationships. So Dusty, as you think about this definition, where does it help us? Where does it give us rails to just sort of run on?
Well, I have in the back of my mind, I hear my wife saying when we reflect on, you know, just different folks that we've counseled or been in community with, that men without vision and men without purpose, this is what she says, men without purpose are in a dangerous spot.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what I hear in the back of my head as we read this definition, because what Piper's saying here is like there's this sense, there's this weight. Another pastor once said, right, that men do better. Men are like trucks. They do better with a load, right? And there's this responsibility. And whenever that starts to not be felt by a man, everything gets a little wayward. Everything gets a little lost. I've never sat down with a couple where the man was negating responsibility, didn't have a sense of purpose, and marriage was okay, or just like life seemed good for them, you know? So he's really just landing the plane on what God has wired us to be and who we're to become. And I think the encouraging piece here, again, is that we're maturing into this whole thing. This is, you don't need to be this tomorrow, but you do need to have a sense in which you're becoming this, to use his language.
Yes. There's, as we see masculinity deformed pastorally, Dusty, it's probably always in one of two categories, right? Some men are passive and abdicating their responsibility. Other men are domineering and abusive and overbearing. And so generally that's the way it's going to get distorted. And I feel like this definition gives us a really beautiful picture of what is a right and good and godly sense of benevolent responsibility look like, especially that phrase benevolent responsibility. That's just a great phrase.
Yeah, that's good.
That sense of like, I'm responsible, but my responsibility is not about me. It's about caring for and willing the good of the people that I'm responsible for. I mean, obviously, this is Jesus, right? Jesus had a sense of benevolent responsibility, right? He's bearing responsibility for our sins and doing so because he is willing our good. And that's a really beautiful thing. I think about, this plays out too in just how we raise boys and girls, right? Like there's a reason why when we're going into a restaurant, I want my sons holding the door for their sisters. And it's not because I think their sisters are weak and, it's not because I want to leave it to Beaver kind of existence. It's because it's a way of honoring, right? It's a way of honoring and showing deference to their sisters because they are women and that's appropriate. And so man, in a world and a culture where the lines here have gotten all confused and blurry, I want the church to be a place where just men are expected to be men and boys are expected to show this sense of benevolent honor and responsibility toward women. Bethany, any thoughts as you sort of reflect on this definition now that we've worked our way all the way through it? Anything that stands out to you?
I really like the word benevolent because it's so others focused. And I think that ultimately, like, I know my own heart and I know how selfish I am. And so I know that other people are equally as selfish. And so just the thinking of others piece, I think, is really important here. And I think that that would just change so many things in our current culture if men were thinking of others instead of themselves, particularly women. And so I really like that how they use that word, benevolent.
Well, in conclusion, going back to where we began, manhood and womanhood is something that we feel deeply and intuitively. There's a sense in us of knowing that we need to aspire to a certain kind of personhood. And so hopefully this can help, especially for the men, give some clarity and parameters on what does that look like. And next week in part two, we'll frame out the definition of mature femininity and And what is that? And how do we start to unpack that? Recently at our men's retreat, Dusty, I sort of summed this up. I didn't use this definition, but summed it up by saying, hey, men have been given strength that's meant to be used to bless others. And so you could just say that sense of benevolent responsibility. The idea is the strength that you have in unique ways that God's given it to you is to be used to bless others. Mm-hmm. And when men use that, and it is a blessing to the world. And when they can also use their strength to curse others. And that's where you get distorted masculinity and unhealthy masculinity. And that's everywhere around us. And so mm-hmm. God's men particularly need to be men who are a blessing to the world and a blessing to their sisters in Christ and a blessing to their mothers and their friends and their wives. And that the church is a place where we see these things redeemed and restored in the ways that they ought to be.
Yeah, and the idea of strength should not be negated. I think we're also in a culture and in the church culture where we just see men abdicating their strength and checking their strength at the door, and that needs to be used yeah. in a God-honoring way.
Yeah.
And the church needs the strength of men.
Yeah.
And the culture definitely does, in a good and godly way.
Well, thanks for listening, and next week we'll tackle the definition of biblical womanhood and tease it out in similar ways.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from our listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of The Wednesday Conversation.